people expect women to be humble and nice, even as leaders. And they don't expect that from men. I mean, when men speak in like strong tones or firmly, people are like, oh, he's a leader. Oh, his audacity, or, you know, but I mean, when a woman is passionate about that job, and, you know, she speaks from a place of passion, or she speaks, you know, firmly, people are like, women are wicked. Women leaders are wicked. Oh, she was speaking to me somehow. You know, people just expect women to be humble, or women leaders to be humble or nice, you know, and they will not expect that from men. And, you know, and I find it very, you know, hypocritical.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Modern Workplace Conversations, where we explore critical and often under-discussed topics within the professional world. Every week, we feature experts ranging from HR professionals to operators to lawyers and CEOs to provide you with diverse perspectives on workplace issues, trends, and best practices. I'm Oluwanifemi Kolawole, Senior Editor, TechPoint Africa. Today, we are focusing on what it takes for a high-performing professional to survive in a place like Nigeria. What are the good and the bad sides of the hustle culture? Where do professionals draw the line in leadership? And how can women leaders remain successful within a system that appears to always question their competencies? Joining me on this conversation today is Munyoluwa Joseph, an operations executive and program manager with over 10 years of public and private sector experience in policy and governance, innovation and technology, and international development. She is the country lead at Optimus Digital Future, a nonprofit organization with a mission to democratize AI knowledge for Africa's sustainable development. She is also the host of AI and You, a 13-episode TV program on Channels Television, which aims to drive AI awareness for adoption. Her life mission is to help women achieve economic power. Let's get into the conversation.
Hi, Munyoluwa. Thank you for joining me on this call today. I'm really looking forward to what we make out of this conversation. Today we are talking about how it feels to work as a high performing executive in Nigeria. Like, so we're going to be discussing everything around managing your work, managing your life, managing people, staying sane while still delivering to your optimal. And so we are going to talk about everything, what every professional should know. Now, we are doing personal today. Let's leave people out of it. Let's deal with executive professionals by themselves. And Munyoluwa has been in the professional space for over 10 years, and she has done conventional, she has done tech, and she has handled different teams. So I believe she's in the best position to talk about this and give insight into what has worked for her, what mistakes she might have made, how she has been able to correct them, how it is currently going for her, what the plan is, and the lessons that other professionals can learn from it. So I'm looking forward to a very, very interesting and insightful conversation today. Welcome once again to the Modern Workplace Conversation.
Hi, Oluwanifemi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes. Okay, so I think we should start with this important question, which is, what was your idea of working when you started working? And I'm asking that because sometimes we enter into a space with an idea, and then over the course of the years, we see different sides to what we didn't even envisage. So, Mayolu, I would like to know, what was your idea of working before you got it?
Thank you. So I think my idea of working, I'm trying to think about my very first job, right? And I think that would be probably IT or CWES, what we call CWES back in the day. And back then, the idea of CWES was just to, you know, go for the, I think it was 3 to 6 months, or I can't remember anymore. I think it was three months. So to go for the 3 months or the 6 months, you know, program to kind of get practical skills, to, you know, to add to the theoretical knowledge that you've learned in school. So to be honest, I was young and I don't think I had any idea of work. So I studied microbiology and I did my CWS program at NAFDAC at OSHOD. So it was a microbiology lab. It was basically actually very interesting because, you know, we've learned a lot in school. We also had a lab in school, you know, where we did some mini experiments as well. But, you know, going into this place where you're working on things that could impact, you know, society, right? So let me try to remember, back in the day, we were, you know, processing or testing food products, you know, to be sure that they were free of harmful bacteria, harmful fungi. So it was actually fun, right? You know, so we've done all this theory in school. So now we are like in the workplace, right? So I'm not sure I had any expectations, to be honest. I just wanted to get it done. I just wanted to be done and, you know, over with it. You know, to sign your logbook every day to be sure that, you know, you could get your A in CWS so that at least you could boost your CGPA. So to be honest, I didn't have any, you know, expectations of work. But I want to compare this to my first job, right? After NYSC, I started my career in government, in the ministry actually. And my first thought about the job was I did not even have an idea that the ministry existed, to be honest. And I remember after I got the job, I had to go research what the ministry did, like, you know, what was my role, you know, and how would I be able to, you know, perform excellently in my tasks. Again, I think I'm going to stress the importance of having a very supportive boss here. I think I should just bring it in, because even though, you know, I did not have an idea of what I was doing, again, I was young when I had my first job, but I had a boss who I could also call my mentor. I mean, she was my first boss, and to be honest, I keep telling people she's still my best boss till today. She's retired now, you know, and she was able to sit me down to, you know, let me know, okay, this is an opportunity for you to identify your skills, it's an opportunity for you to grow even beyond this environment. So I mean, that started shaping my, you know, idea of work. And this is 2013, right? So that started shaping my idea of work. Based on this opportunity or this role, I also doubled as a personal assistant. And that was where I was able to identify my communication skills. I was able to identify that I could write speeches, you know, I could do all these things. I could research, I could edit. You know, it just gave me an opportunity to begin to develop my skills, or to begin to discover, actually, not develop, to discover my skills, and to set me up for who I am today.
That's amazing, and it's good because some people that are just starting, some people want to have it figured out, they want to have an idea. You don't have to stay in the same field that you started working in. You can always pivot, but some people just feel like, I need to enter where I want to stay for a long time, and it can like stall them from getting things done. Yeah. Thank you for starting with that. Now, you said 2013, and now you've climbed that ladder and you've gotten to that phase where you can be called a professional. In fact, you've held executive roles. Now, what are the challenges that you would say you've encountered that, you know, this is not typical for every other person that is working. It is specific for people that are executive, people that are called professionals. Because I want to say something, because a recent report by Intel Point, research arm, revealed that some people don't even know whether they are experts or they are not. Because how would you call yourself an expert and you're still earning between $100,000 and $300,000? I was surprised because I was looking at the report and said they call themselves experts and this is what they are earning. So when I asked an HR, he said it's probably maybe they don't know what being an expert is, or they have found themselves in the wrong place. So I want you to mention some challenges that are specific to professionals and experts that you've encountered in this your journey.
All right, before I answer the question, I just wanted to speak to the, you know, the idea of what you said about, you know, being an expert and still earning a certain fee. I think that in this part of the world, especially in Nigeria, we're very obsessed with titles. We're very obsessed with, oh, I'm a thought leader, oh, I'm a so-so-so-so boss, manager, blah, blah, blah. And while it's not a bad thing in itself, I think that the focus on this just stifles growth, right? When you're already seeing yourself as, you know, a certain title or a certain level, it stifles your growth. I think that people should prioritize skills, developing the right skills as much as possible. And when you think about skills, you don't think about it based on location, like based on, oh, I'm in Nigeria. You should think about skills that are relevant globally. Right. So that's just to respond, you know, to that statement. And back to the question of what are the challenges that, you know, professionals see in Nigeria. I mean, I don't know where to start, because Nigeria in itself is a place that's filled with challenges. I was just having a conversation with my friend earlier this morning. So I went on a trip and I got back 2 weeks ago. And since I got back, it's been like back-to-back issues, right? Someone was telling me, welcome over the weekend. And I was like, welcome from where? Like, I've completely forgotten about my trip because it's been back-to-back issues. So we find ourselves in a very challenging environment as a society. And also in the workplace as well, it's no different, right? But aside from, you know, all the challenges that we're dealing with as professionals or as Nigerians generally, I think one of the challenges that I have found, you know, as a high achieving manager in Nigeria is, and I'm very, very careful to say this, it's very rare to find people who are self-starters, who do excellent work and who are very reliable. I mean, and again, I say this with very, I mean, I'm very careful to say this. I'm not saying they don't exist, but they're very rare. And again, this may have something to do with, you know, our mediocre way of doing things in the Nigerian society, right? A lot of people just, you know, go into work, just, you know, do what they have to do and get out. Again, I'm sure I know that there are so many factors that can, you know, that add up to this, but it's a huge problem. And which is something that over time I've had to learn to manage my expectations. I'm someone who is very, I mean, I tell people it's excellence only, like, right, as much as possible. And so I find myself expecting that from other people that maybe I manage or that I work with. And so I had to reorient, like, I had to do like a reorientation for myself to say, Moi, you need to manage your expectations. It's something I'm still working on every day. But again, I want to say this to, you know, maybe other leaders and other managers. If you are very fortunate to find one of these people, and I call them unicorns, right? Hold them tight, you know, and treat them well, treat them with care, because it's, to be honest, it's very, very, very rare. And again, I say this carefully, but again, it's very rare to find self-starters and people who do excellent work. So I don't know if I've answered the question.
Yeah, you've only mentioned one challenge. I don't know if there are other challenges that you've encountered.
I mean, there are always challenges, but that's the one that came to my mind right now. If maybe in the course of the conversation, if there's another one, can I also still talk about it? But I hope I won't be derailing the conversation.
Yeah, no, it's fine. You mentioned something the other time, self-starters. And it reminded me of a conversation I had some months back and about the kind of people leaders look for on their team, right? And the person I spoke with raised a valid point, which is you can't always find people like a single set of people. You can't always have them in your workplace, okay? There will be self-starters, there will be people that need to be encouraged to work. There are people that they need new challenges every other month or every other year, like that. So what will you say about that? Like finding people to comprise your team, to be on your team, how do you balance self-starters, for instance, and slow learners, for instance? Because that's not how you can... You just find... a mosaic of everything in your workplace. So how do you balance who to bring in, who to not bring in?
I think, I mean, like you said, we are all different, right? Like we always say all fingers are not equal, and every one of us, we have different fingerprints. In society, we're diverse. Nigeria in itself is a very diverse country, right? And, you know, we are also diverse individually. We have our strengths, we have our weaknesses. So I think that it still boils down to the culture of the workplace, right? To be able to manage everybody's strengths and weaknesses to ensure that, you know, everybody, the team, is able to reach their goals. I'm very, very particular about work culture, because I think that when people come into work, whatever culture it is that exists in the workplace, we'll be able to shape them into, you know, people that, you know, can deliver. Right. Again, when we employ people, we just look at their CVs, we look at, you know, their experiences, we look at their strengths, but you don't really get to know what they can do until they come in, right? I mean, people can put up whatever it is they want to put on their CVs. And so it boils down to the organization, you know, to have the right culture fit for these people, to be able to bring out the best in them. There are people that probably, you know, we may not describe them as self-starters in themselves, but when they're able to come into a culture, you know, that drives them, that pushes them to be able to achieve their tasks, to be able to achieve their goals, you'll see that they deliver, right? So again, the onus is on the workplace and the managers and the leaders to be able to drive that culture, you know, excellence, that culture of you know, team collaboration, you know, the right communication, the right processes and structure. Again, I'm a process person, I'm a structure person. I believe that when the right systems are put in place, everybody just falls in line, everybody just fits in perfectly. So again, it's back to, you know, the culture, the system, the structure in the organization that's able to help everybody, you know, to develop as a leader themselves, because I mean, we're individually leaders, right? To be able to deliver, you know, on their task, and also to develop themselves so that even if when they come in and they're leaving better people and you know, better leaders.
Yes, that's good. So that would take me to my next question, considering the uniqueness of each person. There's this conversation that I keep finding myself drawn into, two of them. One is about job hopping, and the other is about doing multiple works at the same time. And I discovered that both of them found their roots in the hustle culture, like getting things, just doing something to survive. Even if you have to do like five jobs at the same time, or leave a job. There are some people that started working 6 years ago and they probably worked in four or five places already. It takes its roots from hustle culture. I don't know, you've been in this space for over 11 years working now. What's your opinion about the hustle culture? Is it good in itself? Is it bad? Is it just there?
So to be honest, I'm forever for the hustle culture, right? Again, I drive myself very hard. I'm excellence driven, like go. So I'm forever for the hustle culture, like sign me up. I think that the hustle culture has its good side and its bad side, and I will explain. The good side of the hustle culture is it helps you to level up. It helps you to earn better income. In a place like Nigeria, you constantly need money to be above water, right? I mean, just look at the inflation rates, you know, right now. Anything to level up and earn better income, sign me up. But again, another good part of the hustle culture is, you know, you're working hard, you're delivering excellent work. It makes you noticeable, right? It makes you noticeable to your managers, it makes you noticeable to your leaders, and also to the organization. And this can contribute to your personal growth, your career growth, and of course, more money, like I said. But on the other hand, there's the bad side of hustle culture. Again, I've experienced this. I mean, I've been burnt out. I've had to leave a job, you know, where I was stressed mentally and physically, and it was starting to affect my health. And this is the bad side of hustle culture. You know, you begin to ignore your physical health. You start getting burnt out. You're not engaging in hobbies or other activities. You're not spending time with your family. You're not spending time with friends. And this is where the problem, you know, comes in. Because I mean, we need our bodies to work, right? So it's very important for us to prioritize our bodies, to prioritize our health. So as much as I'm for the hustle culture, it's important to strike a balance as much as possible. It's important to take care of ourselves. It's important to do our best to ensure work-life balance. I mean, a lot of people say that work-life balance is a myth. But we can only try. I'm for the hustle culture. But now, after getting burnt out, you know, after experiencing mental and physical stress because of, you know, pushing myself so hard, I've realized the importance of balancing things out, of taking out time, you know, to have fun, to go out with friends, to engage in my hobbies, you know, to spend time to think about my health, to prioritize my body, because I mean, we need our bodies to work.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mayolua, for that. I love that you mentioned personal experience, right? And I want to take this question from there because I've had opportunity to talk with several experts in the course of my job, and There was a time I was doing a series, I think I did it for almost 2 years. It's called Expat and African, where I just randomly speak with expats across Africa. And there's this specific question I always ask, the work-life balance part, and different people have different opinions about it. Now, at what point in your own professional life did you discover that you were, that this hustle culture was affecting you? Because early starters, or not early starter, or early stage professionals, maybe they've spent between one to five years or 6 years or 7 years, they'd be like, this is the part where you have to work yourself to death, so that when you get to the years that come after, you are able to enjoy. I want to understand if that is right. At what point did you personally understand that I need to take a pause, I need to do something about it, this hustle culture is affecting me? At what point, and if you want to advise, at what stage do you think everybody should like just do it and don't mind anything? At what point should you take a break and start taking it steady?
Okay, so like I said, I started out in government, and eventually I pivoted into, you know, managing programs, donor-funded programs. Then I pivoted into tech. And this is me coming from, you know, a low-key environment, a calm environment, you know, into a startup, into a very fast-paced environment. You know, go, 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 fast-paced. You want to grow fast. You have so much to do. And again, about 6 months after I took the role, I had to, I got to take another management role as well. So it was just like the trajectory was really fast, and it was go, 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 go. And I realized that after a while, I was sleeping at 2 a.m. I didn't have time for my friends. I didn't have time for my family. It was just, my life was just all about work, right? And so I also started getting burnt out. I wasn't sleeping well. I started losing weight. It was just a lot at the time. And that was actually when I even realized what, you know, being burnt out meant. I mean, I've been hearing about it, but I mean, I experienced it physically. I think my career, I can divide my career into three stages, right? It's pre-COVID, post-COVID, and then post-burnout. So because of, I think COVID was an opportunity, you know, for everybody to just take a break, you know, to just breathe. So that was a nice period for me to also, like, you know, we're working from home. We're locked down for a really long time at first. So it was a time, you know, to just, you know, take our time to reevaluate myself, reevaluate, you know, my plans, my career plans, and my plans for my life. And then as we came out of COVID, that was when I pivoted into tech. And it was a different ball game entirely. I was excited about the opportunity. I was excited about the growth potential. But again, it was taking a toll on my body and on my health. Again, back to the question. I feel like I'm already deviating from the question. To answer the question that at what time, you know, should people, you know, go, 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 join the hustle culture? To be honest, I think that in hindsight now, if it's possible for people to balance out from the start, right, it will be great. But again, not everybody has that, what's it called, has the opportunity, you know, to balance out from the start. Because again, Nigeria is, I don't know what to say. And I mean, I kind of feel bad for a lot of young people, because, you know, they're starting out at a time where things are really difficult. The inflation is over 30%. You know, they need so much more money, you know, to be above water. I mean, when I started working, I still joke with my friends, I was earning less than 100,000, and I was ordering shoes on ASOS. I mean, pound was 250 naira. I mean, life was good. I mean, what did I need at the time? But now young people are having to deal with a very terrible economic environment, inflation, and that's why a lot of them are having to take two jobs, three jobs, and it's telling on their health, right, and on their mental health as well. So I think that the advice I will give is, yes, you need to also, because again, you need to provide for yourself, and, you know, I mean, house rent, food, everything is just so expensive. But if you can engage in a hobby, maybe join a book club, maybe play a sport, you know, go out with your friends on the weekend, so that, you know, you're not constantly in that space of mental stress all the time. You know, like take some mental breaks, you know, go to the movies, you know, spend time with your family, spend time with your friends, you know, engage in your hobbies, play a sport. I feel like that will help. But again, for those that, I mean, on the other, and also, you know, take our time to do your health checks as well. But again, I think young people, you know, this is the time to actually hustle, to be honest, right? Let's forget, you know, aspire to perspire. This is the time to hustle while you're young, while you still have the strength, you know, while you can still go. And again, to be honest, in the workplace in Nigeria, the best way to grow and to increase your income is to, you know, change jobs as fast as you can, as much as possible. A lot of organizations do not have, like, you know, very progressive, you know, structure of promotion and, you know, salary increase. And that's why people change jobs a lot, so that they can increase their income. So once you're in a place, use all the opportunity you have to develop your skills, increase your skills. And then when you switch, or when you switch jobs, you get a higher role, get more pay. Also take the opportunity, increase your skills, like focus on developing your skills. And by skills, I mean being relevant globally, not just in Nigeria, and not just about, you know, the money or whatever perks that come with the job. You know, make sure that it's an environment that can help you, you know, to develop new skills that will make you relevant and make you, you know, get, you know, a better offer in future.
Thank you very much, Mayolua, for that. So you're all in for the Ozu culture, young people.
Oh yeah.
Ozu. Oslo.
Oslo. But again, also you have to think about your health, and your I mean your physical health and your mental health as well.
Yeah, so before I move to the next question, you're talking about thinking about your physical health and the mental health. What's your opinion about, like, taking breaks or sabbatical, like a gap year while you're working? At what point do you have the audacity to do that in your professional work? That's the audacity.
Yeah, it has to be the audacity, especially in a place like Nigeria, again, where you need so much money and, you know, staying away without earning anything. Again, I feel like if people get to a point where maybe they feel stuck in their careers, and they want to take out time to, you know, re-strategize, or, you know, realign with their values, realign with their career goals and plans, I'm all for taking time off. I mean, sometimes last year I also had to, I mean, I can't call it a sabbatical. It was just about a month, really. It was just for me to rest. Again, I just left the job where I was burnt out from, and, you know, you're taking a toll on my health physically and mentally, and I just needed some time out. So I don't know if I can call mine a sabbatical. It was just a month. But again, if you can afford, you know, to take out time, and if you feel like you're in a place where you feel stuck, and you just need some time, you know, to reevaluate your career choices, you know, to think about where you are, where you want to go, where you want to go. I mean, I'm all for it, to be honest. Again, if you can afford it, I think that's very important in this time.
If you can't afford it, stay.
If you can't afford it, just plan towards it. Plan towards it and save up, you know, towards it.
All right.
Because trust me, Sakwa is outside. Like, seriously.
It is, though. Let's not lie.
Even for people that are earning, you know, they are going through it. You know, talk more of those that are not earning anything right now.
Not earning. So think about it well, plan it, and it's possible. Okay, so let's move from there to creating boundaries. You know, when I was having a conversation with Lanre last week, he mentioned how he had to, like, change, like, work on his management style, and those things have yielded results. Like, you have to be in the lives of people that you're managing, you have to be accessible to the people you're managing, so that at least they will be able to feel they're in the right place. It's a form of a good company culture. Now I want to ask, how do you, like, define what boundary is, and how do you enforce what boundary is as a leader, as a professional in the workplace, whether you're managing people, of course the organogram, you still have people ahead of you and people below you. How do you define boundaries and how do you enforce them?
Well, this may sound very funny, but again, I feel like it's always best to be as real as possible when having conversations like this, so that you can really connect with people. How I will define boundaries, to be honest, is simply do your job and go home. Do your job and go home. There are a lot of things that are, negative about the Nigerian society. And unfortunately, the workplace culture is one of them right now. And managing boundaries becomes easy when people know you for who you are from the get-go. So come to work, you're work to do your work, right? Do your job and go home, simple and short. And I also want to emphasize this, in particular for women, because we are usually the ones who want to be the Mother Teresa or want to take on the Mother Teresa personality in the workplace or wherever we go, right? Do your job and go home. It's as simple as that. I mean, that's how I define boundaries. Do your job and go home. As a woman, especially as a woman leader in the workplace, be kind but be firm. Reject any suggestion, you know, take on any domestic roles at work if it's not part of your responsibility. Document your wins. Don't try to be anybody's savior. Again, do your job and go home. Like, I cannot overemphasize this. Do your job and go home. Basically, that's what boundaries mean to me.
You mentioned something like domestic jobs. What would that entail?
Oh, okay. I mean, I was speaking particularly to women, you know, there are things where maybe somebody is having a birthday and, or maybe they have to cut the cake or they have to serve. If it's not your job, if it's not part of your responsibility as a woman in the office, please do not do it. Because, you know, people have this opinion that, oh, women, you know, at work, oh, it's your job, right? You know, it's your job to serve tea, it's your job to cut the cake. I mean, don't do it. If it's not part of your job description, please do not do it. Do your job, go home. Don't be anybody's savior. Don't be anybody's shoulder to cry on. If there's anything, you know, that you are privy to, if there's anything that you see escalate to HR or escalate to the department in charge, again, do your job and go home. That's boundaries to me.
I love this perspective you brought into it, because many workplaces that tout themselves as great workplaces, they have, let me call them, extracurriculars that they do, you get, and they're not your job, but it's kind of like a way of making workers to feel at home, to be free, to feel that they are in a good place. What do you think of those activities? Because if you're all for doing your job and going home, those ones would be like an extra weight on you.
Oh no, I'm not against extracurriculars at work. I mean, I'm definitely not against extracurriculars at work. I mean, these things are put in place for people to bond, like for teams to bond, so that it's easier to collaborate with people. I feel like those people that have come up with all those things, they feel like when you're in a more relaxed environment, you know, it's easy to understand your team members, easy to know, you know, how to get things out of them, it's easy to communicate better, and I'm completely for that, right? But I just feel like, you know, do the extracurriculars, get to know your teammates, get to know them, have fun. I mean, it's also part of work-life balance, like I said, right? It's not just work. And, you know, these organizations, you know, want to have an opportunity for their employees, you know, to let their head down, you know, to, you know, engage in activities outside work. So, I mean, that does not contradict the statement of do your job and go home at all. Do your job and go home is, you know, do your job and go home. Like, it's as simple as that.
I just totally get. What about making friends at work? What do you think about that?
Oh, I was thinking about when we're talking about this, like when I was answering this, I thought it was going to come up, and it did. My best friend, I met my best friend at work, like my best friend right now, we met at work, like two jobs or two roles ago, right? And so it's not that you should not make friends. Again, I find that, you know, when people come to work, we, like we say, you know, we spend most of our life at work. We spend about 8 hours a year at work. And so when you're able to, you know, work with people, and I mean, you get to know them over time, you get to see if your values align, you get to see if they want, you know, if they have the same ideals that you have. I mean, of course, it's inevitable if you want to be friends with people, with your colleagues. But again, you're not going in with the mindset to make friends at work, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not completely against, or I'm completely against the statement of people that say don't make friends at work. Because again, work is a social place. You get to meet people. And it's very likely, you know, for you to find people that align with your values and your ideals, and you want to be friends with them. So by all means, necessary, be friends. I mean, if you find people that you want to be friends with at work, by all means, necessary, be friends with them. Again, like I said, my best friend currently, we met at work.
Because sometimes you don't know where you find support, the right support that you need.
And oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
As you mentioned, you spend a lot of time at work. A lot of time, your life, part of your life at work.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So I want to ask an interesting question. I hope it is interesting, though. But what shocks have you received, have you experienced as a professional at work? Like, especially when you started management roles or leadership roles, what were the things that shocked you? Culture shock, being a manager, being top of the organogram. What are the things you've seen?
I think, let me talk generally first, and I'll be a little more specific. I think generally, I would say that the number of meetings you have to be in. when you are a team member, you know, there are specific meetings you have to be in, maybe for your team, or, you know, maybe you are in charge of a project and stuff. But when you are getting to a management level, there are so many meetings that you need to, you know, make an input, in most decisions that have to happen. My current role, when I joined my current role, you know, again, I was brought in to set up a nonprofit, but at the time, at some specific period, I had to also double as the head of business in the for-profit side. And that moment, that period of my life, whenever I open my calendar, like on my phone, it's always so crazy because the number of meetings, you know, that I had to be in, you know, it's crazy. You know, again, as a leader, the buck stops at your table also. So you take both the glory and, you know, the lash, you know. again, I don't think that should be surprising, you know. Like they said, heavy is the head that wears the crown. But more specifically, and I'm going to be very real here, I think that no period of my life has my sleep been disrupted as this period. So people who know me, like from way back, I remember after we left school, and one of my friends called me and said, "Oh, do you still sleep on Sunday afternoons?" Because, I mean, that was my brand in school. Like, I do not joke with my sleep, right? I used to joke that if I'm going to represent Nigeria in any sport, it will be sleeping. But right now, I think if I get more than 5 hours of sleep, I mean, that's a really good day. Because even my body has become accustomed to, you know, max 5 hours now, because there's so many things to think about. There's a lot, like, you're juggling a lot at the same time as a leader. So I would say my sleep has been affected seriously.
So those are the things you didn't expect, but now, yes, the sleeping part.
I used to sleep a lot.
My mom used to complain that I sleep a lot, but now she's begging me to sleep.
So I think
I can relate to that side. So
yeah, chamomile tea is my best friend right now, because I mean, almost every night I have to take a mobility so that at least I can sleep very well. Because again, you need sleep, you know, for your brain to rest and for you to feel refreshed every time.
Yeah, life of a professional.
Yeah.
You can't even discourage people from becoming professionals, because, well, you have to grow your career, but these are the trade-offs you have to give.
Yeah, thank the trade-offs, yeah.
For your sincerity there, Moyi. So what survival skills would you say you've picked up in this professional journey that has helped you to do well, to still be standing, you know, for people to be calling you up that come and do this job, like they after you? What are the survival skills you've picked up?
So I'm just going to dwell on one, because it's very against who I used to be. Again, I'm sure when we were having like the pre-conversation before we started recording, I was telling you about how I can be very real, I can be very black or white, you know, I don't have a middle ground. I say things as they are, like I don't care, that kind of vibe. But one thing I've had to learn, you know, in my professional journey is diplomacy, right? Because the truth is, you need people, right? I used to say that I'm a one-woman, you know, I'm a one-woman show. And you know, I'm very hyper independent, but the truth is, in the workplace, collaboration is very essential and very key, you know, to get results. And so I mean, I had to do the hard job of learning to be diplomatic. I mean, I know that people think about diplomacy when you're talking about, you know, foreign relations or, you know, inter-country relations. But trust me, diplomacy can just be what gets you your job, right? Before, I used to be very hard. But now, when I call people up, even people that are my subordinates, I'm like, oh, my boss, or oh, like, how far, how are you? Ah, you know that I'm looking up to you. I want to be like you when I grow up. You know, you just make all those jokes because you know what you want to get from them, right? And even though, you know, they may be busy, they may have a lot of things to do on their plates, but, you know, because you've used, you know, all those kind of communication to break the ice, it's easy to, you know, relate to them. It's easy to ask them for what you want. For example, I mean, I've had a project that I've had like issues with for a while, and you know, I've not been able to get through to someone. And instead of sending an email saying that, oh, I've not been able to reach you forever, blah blah blah, where's my work? I'm like, oh, thank you so much for your support so far on this project, blah blah blah. You know, I'm looking forward to, you know, getting the feedback. You know, do you understand? So even if the person is in a bad place, just seeing, you know, those words, you know, thank you so much for your support so far, blah blah blah, you know. So it's something that I've had to learn. I remember when I pivoted into tech, and again, I'm very grateful to, you know, my manager at the time for that. She was like, Mui, your tone in your emails are so hard. Like, calm down. I mean, at the time in my life, I was going through a lot, to be honest. But again, it still had to do with my personality at the time, you know. So I had to learn, you know, how to, you know, all these terminologies, you know, all this communication style, and you know, to be diplomatic. So yes, you cannot achieve things alone. That's the truth. I mean, the higher you go, the more you realize that you need people. And so collaboration is essential. In fact, it's over essential. It's everything. So you need to learn how to be diplomatic with people. Even when they are not, you know, being cooperative, you still need to find a way, you know, to cajole them, you know, to just, so that, you know, just break the ice, and then you can be able to, you know, they'll be able to do what you want them to do for you, basically. So diplomacy, I mean, it's a hard lesson, but it's something I had to learn. Like, I learned it the hard way.
Diplomacy is a survival skill for every leader. I'm taking that home. Because, yeah, sitting on the fence, sometimes, okay, I'm sure the balance is where you have to be firm on some, in some
cases. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, good. Yeah, so this particular question is, I think it stems from the kind of culture we found ourselves with, women being high achieving, going for their goals, and going for things that are main things, as I'm sure we are demystifying all of that in this generation, but I still feel like there are some spaces that those cultural mindsets still hold strong. How have you been able to face that in your journey as a professional, and with the way your transition has been, that's been speedy like that? So how have you been able to go against all these cultural norms, putting women down, expecting them to occupy some spaces and not go near some other ones? I've been able to cope with that.
Thank you very much for that question. Like they say, where do I start from, right? We know that we live in a cult, in a society that is highly cultural. And because of this, you know, women are expected to be a certain way, you know, and not aspire to certain things. How have I been able to navigate this? I will say number one is coconut head. I mean, that's the truth. I just have coconut head in the first place, because when you tell me that, oh, you can't do, that's when I'm like, oh, okay, and that's the exact thing I want to do, right? But again, I mean, on a more serious note, let me disappoint a lot of women by saying that even as a leader, as a woman, all the gender bias and all the gender discrimination, you are not above it in a place like Nigeria. I mean, it's sad that, you know, your status or your money or your role cannot save you, or cannot save us. And that's really unfortunate. I mean, money can stop some nonsense, so I'll take it. But unfortunately, the society is highly cultural that even your role, your status, you know, cannot save you, you know, from the gender bias and the gender discrimination, right? And again, to be more specific, some of the external pressures, I will say, you know, is one, people place women on a higher pedestal than men. People scrutinize women, you know, more than men. And that's the first thing. I mean, this is applicable everywhere, not just in the professional space, even in politics, even in religion, right? You know, in a place like Nigeria, you find that, you know, men, they have more leeway, they have more leverage, you know, they do things that people are like, people just turn the other eye. But when one woman does something, it's like, oh, you've spoilt it for all the women. Ah, that's how you should not employ women. This, that, women. So women undergo, you know, more scrutiny. And it's like, you know, as a woman, as a leader, it's like you're carrying the weight of all other women on your shoulders. So you cannot afford to fail. I mean, this is very unfair because, again, we're individuals first before we represent our gender. Secondly, and I have experienced this personally, people expect women to be humble and nice, even as leaders. And they don't expect that from men. I mean, when men speak in like strong tones or firmly, people are like, oh, he's a leader, oh, he's audacity, or, you know. But I mean, when a woman is passionate about that job and, you know, she speaks from a place of passion, or she speaks, you know, firmly, people are like, women are wicked, women leaders are wicked, oh, she was speaking to me somehow, you know. People just expect women to be humble, or women leaders to be humble or nice, you know, and they will not expect that from men. And, you know, and I find it very, you know, hypocritical as well. And I think another one is, you know, these women are evil, or women leaders are evil stereotype, you know, that has gone everywhere. Apart from this, I think all the roles I've had, actually I've had women managers. And again, like I said, my very first manager is one of my best managers. Like, she's my best boss ever. I struggle to see this evil stereotype. I mean, when you do something wrong, I mean, managers are supposed to correct you, are supposed to speak, you know, firmly, you know, again, not rudely or harshly, but I mean, to speak firmly, as they should. So again, that's another pressure or whatever that people put on women manager. Again, another one which I find very funny is that people expect that women don't have responsibilities, right? Or don't need money. Wow. So I had a meeting with someone. I was trying to introduce them for a partnership opportunity. And, you know, we're talking about the reward. And you know, the person was like, oh, I'll buy you ice cream. I know that he was joking. Again, he was joking. But in my mind, I'm like, are you kidding me? Right? Because I don't have responsibilities, right? I came to Lagos to sell pepper, right? I came to Lagos to sell pepper, Abby. Do you get? So, I mean, people have all these opinions, you know. They feel like, am I not paying rent? Or am I living free? Or am I not entering, I'm taking transportation and stuff, you know, with people. You know, people think that, women, they don't need money. You know, they don't need to. And again, back to, you know, the gender pay gap and stuff like that. So, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, we will not leave here today. We keep talking about it. I mean, but again, it still shows, you know, how our society is wired, you know, the gender discrimination, gender bias that exists within our society. I mean, it just reflects on the work culture, basically. So it's not a work culture thing. It's the society, you know, that reflects. And again, let me pivot to the family side, you know, the family expectations, you know, from women who are leaders. Of course, I think everybody knows Black Tax. I mean, this is a well-known phenomenon, so it affects everybody equally, whether men or women. But again, the other side of this for women is marriage. You know, your family, you know, expecting that, or saying or insinuating that, you're getting to this level now, you know, people will not, or maybe men will be intimidated by you and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, family expectations, that maybe you need to pipe down or pipe down a bit so that you don't intimidate men, you know, stuff like that. I mean, these are specific issues that women leaders have to deal with, right? And I think I should use this opportunity to also highlight the importance of a supportive partner. I mean, marriage is fantastic for those who want to go into it. But as a woman who is a leader, who is ambitious, who is high achieving and, you know, highly driven, the importance of a supportive partner cannot be overemphasized, right? And again, it's not someone who is intimidated by you, but someone who supports you to achieve your goals. Pray to whatever God you serve, or pray to whatever deity you serve, to help you while you're making the choice of a partner. So, I mean, these are just a few of some of the challenges, you know, that women leaders, or I as well, you know, have to face in the work space.
That's amazing. Thank you very much, Monyolua. You actually mentioned very, very valid point. And if you had not gone to the family side, I would have dragged you to the point, because it is
I have to go to family side because my mother is on my neck every night. So I can never forget it.
it's quite problematic, but I'm sure it's a struggle every professional woman is facing in this space, and I'm sure that we are all finding a way around it. I think we should close with this. Far, you mentioned a bit about it, finding a support system, and you majorly mentioned partner. What other ways can professionals or women professionals in this sense, how can they come up with a support system? How do they look out for people to bring into their spaces? Because I've realized that experts cannot do much without support system, actually.
Oh, definitely.
It's going to be overwhelming. So how do you come up with a support system?
So as a leader and as a woman in particular, your time is your most important asset, right? At this stage of your life. So what you're trying to do is to maximize your time as much as possible, or to optimize for time, right? Because there's so many things, you know, struggling for your time and for your attention. So first of all, I would say outsource everything outsourceable, right? To free up some time and to focus on what's important to you, right? Prioritize what's important to you and create the time for them. So to be able to do that, you need to outsource as much as possible. Again, you need money to outsource. So another plus for us to culture, I guess. Use technology to free up your time. So as much as possible, people always know me. I set reminders like crazy. My calendar on my phone, everything. My hair appointment, my spa appointment, everything is on my phone. I do not joke with. Again, I'm a structured person, so everything has to be planned, everything has to be timed, because again, there's a lot of things juggling for my attention. So I put everything on my calendar. Even sometimes when I used to call my family, I put it on my calendar so I don't forget. People's birthdays are all on my calendar. You need to create time for what is important for you, right? Also, reminders, calendars, like I said, I cannot overemphasize the importance of using these things. Again, it's absolutely important to have a life outside of work. Again, I cannot say this, I cannot stress this enough. You need to create time for your friends and your family, because to be honest, we don't have enough time, right? Like they say, we only have today, we only know today, right? So create time as much as possible to spend time with people you love, because it also helps, you know, to refresh you, to replenish you, right? So that, you know, you have the to also de-stress, right? To take you out of that work mode all the time. Because again, personally, I find that I'm always thinking about work. Oh, what do I need to do? What have I not done? Who do I need to call? But when I'm in a space, you know, with my friends, with my family, it just takes me out of that mode, right? So it's very, very important to create time, to spend time with those you love. Also, another thing I would say is have a hobby, you know, that brings you joy, right? Work is not everything, right? We were not created for work. Why we are working is because we need money to survive, right? So capitalism will not be the death of us. So have a hobby, you know, that brings you joy. I love to read fiction, especially African fiction. So I belong to a book club. We meet monthly. shout out to Women's Group Lagos. We meet monthly to discuss, you know, African literature, and also it's an opportunity to socialize and network as well, to meet with other fantastic women, you know, that have, you know, similar interests. So please, it's important to find a hobby, you know, that brings you joy, maybe playing a sport or whatever hobby, maybe music, maybe art. I love to also visit galleries and museums. So just find something that brings you joy, that takes you out of that work mode. And finally, take care of your body. Like I said earlier, you know, we need our bodies to work. So exercise, dance, take long walks, just move your body, right? Also, it's very important to do your annual health checks, if there's anything wrong, you can figure it out on time, before it becomes, you know, something serious. From my own personal experience, that's how I created balance.
That's great. Quite structured, and some people are not really that structured, but something
you can work towards, right? Especially when with technology now, we have all these reminders. You can just set things up on your calendar that can remind you, and gradually, James Clear said in his book Atomic Habits, you know, doing the right habits every day is voting for the kind of person. Is a vote for the kind of person you want to be. Right. So when you are becoming a leader, you know, you have to be self-disciplined. You know, there are some habits, you know, that you have to ensure that it's a part of you. Right. Because again, you are trying to optimize for time as much as possible.
Yeah. Amazing conversation we've had this past. I mean, wow. We've
1 hour, actually.
Yes. So I noticed that you are a TV host. How did that come to be? I like to talk.
Okay, so that actually came to be in this, my current role. So to be honest, a lot of people find it very difficult to believe that I'm an introvert, and I don't like attention, right? So when I took up this role, and you know, we got the partnership. Yeah, it's actually very shocking, I know. So currently, I'm country lead at Optimus Digital Future. It's a non-profit, and our mission is to democratize access, you know, to AI knowledge and education, for Africa sustainability. And so one of our programs is AI advocacy, because we believe that people need to be aware about the technology before they can adopt it. And so we signed a partnership with Channels TV to develop this 13-episode show called AI and You. You know, we brought in different experts from different sectors to talk about how AI is impacting the sectors, so that people can be able to, you know, realize what AI is and, you know, how it can help them be more efficient, be more productive. And so the conversation came up to, you know, who is going to host the show, right? It's not something that I thought about. It's not something that I was interested in, but eventually it fell on me, right? And again, I have to take it in my stride, and to do it. And it's been fun. I mean, we've recorded the episodes. We're going to be launching in Q1. So that's how I became a TV host.
That's amazing. There are things that always come our way in this profession.
That's also a lesson, you know, for everyone. You know, there are going to be opportunities for you to grow in your career. I mean, don't be completely close to them, because it can also take you to another level, and can also, you know, it can also, you know, help you to develop a new skill that you don't have. So, I mean, I'm very big on communications, but written communications, you know, research, editing. In fact, I was a freelance editor at a period in my life, right? But, you know, having to stand in front of a, what's it called, camera, and it keeps saying take one, take two, take three. You know, it's not something that I ever saw myself doing, but here I am.
Like, thank you very much, Moyolua. Thank you for your sincerity and your vulnerability throughout this conversation. And I'm sure
everyone
listening to this, they've learned one thing or the other that's going to help them in their professional journey. Personally, I have learned something, and there are take-homes from this.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to hear that. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. For more workplace-related content, head over to techpoint.africa/subject/work. All relevant links will be included in the show notes. Don't forget to share your comments and suggestions by reaching out to us at mwc@techpoint.africa. Catch you in the next one.